Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Damien O'Reilly and this is Liveline. The text, and Kieran is on the line. Kieran, good afternoon to you.
Hiya, Damien. How's it going?
Thanks for the call. Take us back to last week. You were in bed. Your nine-month-old baby Gracie is in the cot beside you. What happened?
So we're in bed, myself and my wife Lisa. So 7 o'clock, 7:40 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa heard, she's not sure exactly what the sound was, but like she was asleep, but she heard like a whimpering, like a struggle. Coming from the cot. So she jumped up and she lifted Gracie. But as she lifted her, the sleep nest that she was in lifted out with her. And the cord from the end of the sleep nest was wrapped around her neck twice.
Oh.
And it left a very, very, it was really tight, you know, it left a really red mark, really red roaring mark. So we're thinking maybe a couple of minutes longer, maybe 5 minutes longer, and it could have been a very, very different story.
You must have got some shock, but how is Gracie? Was she okay?
Yeah, I mean, she's fine. She's, as I said, the mark was there. The mark is still kind of there. But I mean, she was crying for a couple of minutes, but after that, she was fine. But as I said, like a couple of minutes later, it could have been very, very different. So that's the reason. Mm. It's just to kind of make people aware of the product. And,
Even if you weren't in the, imagine if you weren't in the room or you'd left the room.
Yeah, like I mean, imagine she was in a different room, or you know, imagine we were downstairs and she was having a nap, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so she's 9 months old and she's sleeping in this. It's kind of a sleep pod or a baby nest, is it?
It's a sleep nest, yeah. Cocoon sleep nest is called. It's sold as a sleep nest, and it's sold. So it was for babies up to 9 months old.
Well, will you describe it, like, obviously for, you know, young parents or parents of young children that use it will know what it is, but for other people, describe how it differs from, we'll say, a carry cot.
It's like, I think the best way to describe it, someone said to me yesterday, it's a little bit like a swimming raft, you know, with the bubble going around the outside of it,
yeah.
But a very smaller version. So the baby lies in it, in the cot. The sleep nest goes into the cot and the baby lies in the nest. And it just makes them comfortable, you know, it goes around their head and around their bodies and it stops them kind of turning over and moving and, you know, keeps them warm at night and it's just a comfort product, really.
Yeah. So it's a little tight nest, you put the baby into it and then put that into the cot, is what you're saying.
That's, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And why did you get this, or did you and your wife hear about it, or what
yeah,
attracted
like, I mean,
you to buying
it? It's a very reputable product. Like, I mean, we've seen them around. We have since Gracie was 2 or 3 months old. It's a well-known product out there. A lot of people use them. You know, we bought it off Amazon, a very reputable company. The reviews are good on it. There was hundreds and hundreds of reviews saying the product was a good product. And, you know, lots of people use it. And I mean, it's worked. Gracie's loved it up until now.
Yeah.
And she slept well in it.
And did you not notice that there was a cord? Because aren't these, you know, baby sleeping products absolutely not to have anything? Isn't the advice always that there shouldn't be anything in the cot with the child? Cords, teddies, you name it. It's just basically all that should go into it is the baby. And had you checked to make sure that there were no cords lying loose?
The purpose, like we knew the cord was there. The purpose of the cord is as the baby grows, the sleep nest can become wider, larger. And that's the purpose of the cord. You unravel the cord to make it wider. You unravel it to make it to make it shorter, depending on the size of the baby. Now, the cord is inside the nest until the end of it, where her feet are. That's where the cord is tied. Then it's in a knot, which shouldn't be able to be unraveled. Like, I mean, it's advertised as a product, as a sleep nest. It's advertised with the cord there. So, I mean, you know, obviously hindsight is a great thing if we had known what we know now, but...
And Kieran, did you make contact with the manufacturers?
I have, yeah. I sent them an email the day it happened, and I sent Amazon an email as well. Amazon have been fine to be fair to them. Amazon have contacted us, and they've been very apologetic, and they're fully investigating the product and the company. The company, on the other hand, they've, and this is the reason what kind of fuming about it. The company, on the other hand, has basically accused of lying. They're saying there's no way that card could have made that mark.
Well, in other words, they are. Well, first thing to say is that they have engaged with you. They are taking it seriously because we've been in touch with them as well. And they gave us a lengthy statement. But they are disputing your claim that the mark around Gracie's neck, and I've seen a photograph of it, was as a result of her getting entangled in their product.
Yeah, they're basically saying that the mark is not consistent. They said they've sent my photos to their professionals and their specialists, and they've come back saying that the marks on her neck are not consistent with the cord, and they're more likely to be from some sort of rash. And I think they actually said nappy rash in the email.
Yeah. Now, it's a Polish company, and so they issued us with a statement as well. But maybe, I suppose, what they mean by a nappy rash, maybe they, you know, got that mixed up with maybe a bib.
Sort of
it could be a bib or a dribble rash, you know, under the fold of the neck. But anyway, you definitely believe that it was as a result of the child getting entangled in this.
Yeah, like my wife picked her up and the cord was wrapped around her neck two times and she unraveled the cord.
Yeah.
You know?
What they say is it's the first report of any irregularities related to this product, and all the more so it is treated with as the highest priority. We believe, though, they say that we believe that the indicated redness on the neck is from a nappy rash that is typical for children of this age.
Yeah, that's what they said, yeah. It's quite laughable, really, that they think we've just fabricated this and, you know, sent them an email of our 9-month-old daughter with a mark around her neck.
But are you looking for any recompense from them or anything, or was it just, why did you contact them, just to alert them to this?
I contacted them to alert them, to ask for an explanation of how this could happen. I asked them for documentation to show me that the product was tested and is fit for purpose.
Yeah.
This is not about, you know, going to court, getting compensation or anything like that. Nothing got to do with any of that. I just want to make people aware.
Sure.
And my wife wants to make people aware. Like they said, it's never happened before. That's fine. It should never happen.
Yeah.
If this is the first time, that's one time too many. You know? And all I want is them to, you know, I know they can't admit liability, but, you know, apologise, you know, hold someone accountable.
Well,
you know, to take the product off the market, maybe.
Yeah. And again, look, I'm just going on like the points that you make there, and we put those to the company, and what they're saying is that they have not had the opportunity to test the product itself, whether it was free from manufacturing defects, etc. We are counting on the response from the customer. Unfortunately, so far, apart from the application itself, we have no further information. So what they're saying is, are you going to send them the pod so that they can investigate further
there were defects? The reason I hadn't replied to them straight away when they emailed me is because I was awaiting legal advice on whether to send the product back or whether to have it tested ourselves. But after seeking that legal advice, I was advised to go ahead and send it back. So it's actually been sent back today.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Because they say the technical team, together with consulting specialists in the field of paediatrics, undertook a preliminary assessment of the situation after reviewing the sent description of the situation as well as the photo. So in other words, they are investigating it, but they want the actual product sent back to them to investigate it further. Now, if you look as well, and Kieran, I'll just put these to you. I mean, if you look at the kind of the small print, as they say, It clearly states that children should not be left unattended in the sleep pod.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing that I was quite shocked by. Like, I mean, they advertise it as a sleep nest for a baby to sleep in.
Yeah.
So how do you expect the baby to be not to be unattended is madness, really. Like, I mean, when the baby sleeps, we sleep. Like, we've got to sleep. We can't sit up all night and watch the baby.
Yeah. It's for to make baby go asleep, so you can go asleep, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, she's 2 feet beside us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's, of course she's unattended because we're asleep also, but I mean, we're there, we're in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I mean, how they can say that your child shouldn't be left unattended when they advertise it as a sleeping product is madness, really, isn't it?
And your wife, I don't know, you know, before that, is this your first baby?
No, it's fourth.
Oh, the fourth, right. So you, yeah. You have a bit of practice there, Ciarán.
No,
I'm just wondering, like, so some of the guys are saying upstairs that, or I'm told that at antenatal classes that would-be parents are advised not to use these sleep pods stroke baby nests.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, all the advice, like, as I said, in hindsight's a great thing again, but, I mean, all the advice does say, you know, never have cords near babies. But, I mean, we deemed this product safe because we bought it from a reputable company, and we deemed it safe because, like, I mean, if it's for a baby, it shouldn't be sold. If there's a tiny, tiny chance that cord can be unravelled, it shouldn't be on the market. And that's been proven now that, whether it's happened once or 1,000 times, it's been proven that that cord can be unravelled and that cord can cause damage.
Yeah.
And 2 minutes later, my baby was dead, you know?
I can only imagine the shock that you and your wife experienced
Thursday. Because she found, I was asleep. I woke up maybe 10 seconds later when the cord was off her neck, but... Like, I looked at my wife and she's just sitting there as white as a ghost. And like, I mean, she still can't get that image out of her head, and she's having trouble sleeping and stuff like that. She's just constantly watching her now, even though the nest is not even in the cot anymore, but she's still watching and watching and watching because she can't get that image out of her head. And she's just thinking, you know, 2 or 3 minutes later, we had no Gracie anymore.
God, yeah, yeah.
You know, sorry.
Oh, I understand, Ciarán. Listen, any parent, it would be, you know, especially with young babies, you can never take your eyes off them. And then when they're not making any sounds, you're wondering as well, you know, is there anything wrong? What do you want to happen now, Ciarán?
I just want awareness, Damien. I just want people to know about it. You know, if I can save a baby's life, great. Yeah. You know, if I can save 10 babies' lives, great.
Yeah. So,
but, I mean,
if people are happy with the sleep pod, any parents that are listening to us that are using this sort of product, what do you say to them?
I'd say take it out. I'd say don't use it. You know, even though that cord looks fine and that knot is a proper knot, it can be unravelled. And whether this one product that we have was defective or not, it possibly was, and possibly millions of them out there are fine. But, like, I mean, if there's a slim chance that this could happen, you shouldn't have it in your car.
Yeah.
You know, and
you never had a close one like that before with any of your children, no?
No, and look, I mean, we're probably ignorant to the fact that this could have happened, and we probably should have never used it when we seen the cord. But, yeah. I mean, you just don't know it till it happens, and that's the only reason I want people to know about it, and people to be aware about it. I don't want people slating the company or, you know, getting a push of the company.
You're being fair about it. You're basically saying this happened to you and you want to alert people out there that it can happen because of what happened. And you've contacted the company. You're not looking for compensation or to take them to court or anything. You just want to raise awareness of what happened. You're engaging with them. You say that you've sent it now to them, and we'll wait and see what response they come back with to you following their investigation. So they seem to be taking it seriously anyway, based on our contact with them, and let's see what they have to say once they receive it.
Yeah, they seem to be all right, because they, as they said to me in the email, they sent the photos off to their specialist. Now,
and I'm sure you're saying you don't want to be slating anybody, and I'm sure they're delighted that you did make contact and that you have highlighted this, because if there is a defect there, they need to know about it. And as you said, if it just alerts parents as to what can happen, you've done a good job there, Ciarán. So look,
I should hope so. Yeah,
yeah. No, thanks a million for highlighting it, Ciarán, and I'm delighted, obviously, and relieved that that Gracie is okay. And good luck, and thanks for contacting us, Ciarán.
Thanks a million, Damien. Appreciate the time.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
All right, and you can text us on 51551. Mary, good afternoon to you. Thanks for contacting us, and my sincere condolences to you, first of all.
Thank you, Damien.
Your sister passed away in August, is that right?
Yes, my sister passed away on the 17th of August. And she had left me a few items, so I got in touch with DPD Interparcel on the 26th, and I filled up two boxes and sent them home, but they never arrived.
What was your sister's name, Mary?
Anne Finnegan.
Anne Finnegan, and she lived in the UK?
She lived in the UK all her life, nearly.
Right. And you were obviously over there after she passed, and...
Well, I was over there a week before she died, and I was there when she passed away. Yeah. And she died in her own home.
In Dagenham?
In Dagenham, Essex.
Right. And you were sending home some of her belongings, which she had left to you.
Yes, she used to collect teapots and bits and pieces, and she always wanted me to take them, but I wouldn't take them till she passed away. And so I packed them all up in bubble wrap and everything and put them into boxes and phoned DPD Interparcel, and they came and collected them. And that was the last I saw of them. So last Friday they said they weren't looking anymore, that they were lost.
Oh God. And it's not the value, it's the sentimental value. It's
oh,
not
it's
the monetary
the sentimental
value.
Because I told them I didn't want money, I wanted the things, I wanted the items.
And you were doing the right thing, because these were, you know, delicate items that you couldn't bring home with you yourself. You had to have them couriered.
Yes, that's the way I looked at it, yes.
Yeah, thought you were doing the right thing. So when did you realise that there was a problem, Mary?
Well, I realised it because I sent some more items over to my sister's address, another sister in Mount Mellick. And she got all hers, and that was a week later, and I still wasn't getting mine.
So you contacted DPD, and what did they
so
say
I
to you?
So I contacted DPD, and they were saying they were looking it up at first.
Mm-hmm.
They did email me on the 26th and gave me a number for the parcel. And then they emailed me again on the 27th and gave me a tracking number.
Right.
And I was going by the tracking number, but the last I heard of them was that it was in transit, and that was on the 31st of August. I did hear one stage that they were delivering them between 11 and 2 one day, so I got in touch home, and I had somebody waiting, and there was nobody there. No, nothing came.
Right, so you're waiting the guts of a month now for this. It shouldn't take that long. Where are you living, Mary, yourself?
I'm living in Tumivara.
In Tipperary?
Yeah.
Right. It's not a Tipperary accent you have there, Mary.
No, I'm from Dublin.
I was thinking so anyway.
Yeah.
So where do you think the teapots now, 50 of them, isn't that right?
There's about 50 of them. I hadn't counted them exactly, but there's at least 50.
Right. And you've no idea where they are, or DPD have no idea where they are. Is that what
no.
they're telling you?
No. On the 27th, one of the girls that sent me an email said that this is your tracking number.
Yeah.
And your item has gone to E34. Now, I didn't. I had E45 on the package.
Ah.
And I got back to them and I said, no, E45.
Now, this is your air code?
That's my air code,
it begins at E45. Okay. So is there a chance that the teapots are sitting in somebody's house somewhere else in the country?
There could be a chance that there were two large plastic boxes I had bought over there for the sake of parceling them up and sending every. I said, actually, there was a lot of things in it. It wasn't just teapots, it was other little sentimental value mm-hmm. things, and there was all my clothes to save me carrying them in a case, and there was jackets and coats and, you know,
all right, yeah.
shoes.
So a lot of things that you don't want to lose.
A lot of things, yeah, quite a lot. There was Christmas cloths in it, and they were Nan's as well. We called her Nan, but her name was Anne.
Right, yeah. And I'll ask you a bit more about Nan in a minute. But I just DPT have issued a statement to us. They say that we do not have full visibility on where the item is at present. The consignment number provided is not one of our Irish numbers that we have visibility on. I can only see the item was scanned in the UK in August. I've reached out to our colleagues in the UK to obtain the number needed so I can see where the item currently is. So it's live. I mean, they haven't said, well, we're done with this. They, you know, we don't know where it is, and that's the end of that. So at least they're having a look to see where the teapots and everything else is.
Oh, well, my email on Friday said that they weren't looking for them anymore. That they're classing them as being lost. That's why I got mad.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, maybe it's been revived now since we contacted them.
Oh, hopefully.
Well, they've reached out to the UK. I mean, they could be anywhere. They could be in Scotland, or they could be anywhere.
They could be, but somebody might have got them in their door, and there might have been somebody very honest and still has them and is waiting for DPD to come back for them, or if they were delivered when they were out or anything like that.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Somebody probably has the parcel there, or it could be sitting in a hallway in an apartment block or something like that waiting to be collected.
Well, they're very big. The two boxes were big, so, I mean, they're very visible.
Yeah. And why was Nan into teapots, or how did that come about?
Somebody started to buy a few for her years ago, and she always collected them after that.
Right.
And she had a big glass cabinet full of them.
All sorts of.
She had
short and stout and everything.
Yeah, she had her windowsills full, and yeah. I wrapped them really well in bubble wrap, and I had plenty of that because she used to sit all day bursting bubbles. God. She had nothing else to do.
Right. She lived alone, did she?
She lived alone and she was blind.
Ah. And what age was she when she died?
She was 88.
Ah, right. She had a good long.
She had, yeah.
And you say she was all her life in the UK?
She, most of her life, she went over there when she was about 21.
Right. And so she'd go over to work over there. So that would have been, what, 67 years ago when a lot of Irish people
no,
left?
No, she got married, and at the time my father wasn't very keen on her husband. So
she got married
here in Ireland, she did, and then eloped after that.
All right. That was kind of sad, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was.
Do you remember that time?
I remember, you know, years ago sleeping with her and that, but I don't remember the day she got married, because it was done, she got married discreetly. She never had any family.
Oh. And was her husband an Irishman?
Her husband was an Irishman, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously, and I mean, that there was a lot of that at the time, you know, of kind of class discrimination and whatever else you're having yourself in relation to, you know, families approving or disapproving of.
Well, this is it, yeah.
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 And did she lose, I mean, you obviously stayed in contact with her.
Oh, we all stayed in contact,
right.
And she was like a mother to us, because her mother died young, and she was, like, we always went to her house, and even when she got old and wasn't able to see and whatever, we went there religiously every year for her birthday on the 5th of June.
All right, okay.
And
So she settled into a happy life in Essex?
Oh, she settled into a lovely life. Her husband was about 25 years dead. And then she would have been over 50 years in this house, although it was a council house, she never bought it.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so she's been alone for the last 25 years of her life?
She has been alone, except for neighbours and friends and family calling in.
Yeah. And did she ever lament the fact that she had to go? Do you know what I mean? Or did she?
No. I had a long conversation with her there I'd say 2 years ago. And she was talking about years ago and how poverty was stricken and so on. And she was very happy that she had what she had.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't a lot, you know, she was very happy in herself that way. Unfortunately, she lost her sight through glaucoma. So,
that's sad indeed. But she followed her heart. She followed her heart, Mary.
Oh, she did. Yeah, she did. And she wouldn't have left. We begged her to come home. We begged her to go and live with every one of us. Did the same. We begged her to come and live with us. But she said no, she'd be carried out of there in a box. That's all she ever used to say, because when she was blind, she knew her way around that house and nowhere else.
Yeah, yeah. And did herself and your dad, did they, like, what sort of relationship did they have after that then?
They didn't have any because, like, he died very young. He died shortly after. He was only 53.
Oh, God, right. That was a pity, yeah.
They didn't have much communication.
Mm. Yeah. And do you remember how he felt about her going away that time? Like, did he feel sad?
No, he was a hard man. Like, he was a very hard man.
Which would have been usual around those times, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know I'm going down a completely different route, but I'm just curious and interested, and, you know, listeners as well will probably remember those times as well and similar situations.
Well, they were poor times, but yeah, supposed to were happy times in ways.
Yeah. And how did you end up down in Tuamhe Mhara?
Oh, that's a long story, but I lived in London. Most of my family are in London.
All right.
Because back that time they all had to go and work. And so I have two sisters and a brother over there.
All right, okay.
And so I was there and I came home, and the cheapest place to live was down here to buy a house.
Yeah, lovely part of the world.
It is a lovely part, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to say it's lovely.
Yeah. So anyway, look, we'll stay in contact with DPD, and we'll let you know if they come back to us, or you let us know if they come back to you, if there's any sign of the teapots. I mean, are they delicate china type teapots? Would they be?
Yeah, they're Delf, yeah.
Yeah. So they could be damaged.
And
so they're not taken care of.
Some of them were china, and there was a few clocks in it. And of these are the sentimental bits. Like,
yeah,
the clothes, I can get over. You know, yeah, everyone has enough clothes these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can get over that.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, no. The things I don't want to be offered 100 or 200 for these things. I want the items.
Sure, yeah. And in memory of
I do, yeah.
Of Nan,
I want
well,
to be able to pass them on.
Yeah. And are any of them of, you know, they're all sentimental value, but are any of them of monetary value? Are they any of them very old or unusual or rare?
There was lots of different shapes in them. Like, there was some of them animal shapes and pigs and, right, you know, different shapes as well as ordinary little teapots, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as I said, two big black kind of plastic boxes. As
no,
I said,
they were see through. They were the ordinary plastic.
Okay.
They weren't black.
Oh, they weren't black. Sorry, they were plastic boxes.
See through boxes. Yeah.
Right. Because as I said, they could be sitting in the hallway of an apartment block, you know, where they might have been delivered by accident because there was a digit wrong or something like that, as opposed to obviously maybe you've been delivered to somebody's house, or they could be sitting in a van, or they could be in a warehouse.
It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
But you see, you're supposed to have a declaration form, and I explained to the girl over there that there was no internet in the house over there when I was phoning up to arrange it.
Yeah.
And I said, there's no internet at all in the house, because being blind, she didn't know how to use a phone, don't mind an internet.
Yeah.
But anyway, the girl very nicely said, look, don't worry, I'll get the man that's collecting it to do that and put the forms onto your parcel.
And you actually met the DPD man in
Dagenham? Yes, I opened the door to him and I gave him out the boxes. He came in and picked up the boxes, and when he went out to the van, I followed him out and I gave him a tenner for a tip. I said, because he had to do the print out for me.
Okay, yeah, he was helpful. So all the paperwork was done as far as you were concerned and everything?
So as far as I was concerned, because he spent about 10 minutes at the gate of the house before he drove off.
Yeah, yeah.
So as far as I was concerned, that's what he was doing.
Yeah. And Mary, so you spent time in London yourself, you're saying. What did you do over there, or did you?
I just worked for a couple of years, that's all.
All right, okay. But you're glad to be back home now.
Yes, I like here, yeah.
Right, okay. And how are you managing with all the restrictions and COVID?
Well, I got my vaccines, and I suppose I'm nearly due another one now because of my age.
Yeah.
Because I'm 77 going on 78, and they gave it to us early last year because I was diagnosed with cancer. So,
oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
As far as I know, that's cleared up now. So,
okay,
everything's fine.
You've come through it anyway, but
I'll come through it. I live in spite.
I don't know whether you saw that wonderful documentary last night, Cocooning. Do you know, it was on RT1, absolutely beautifully made. Some great characters on it, you know, and trying to and gave a great insight, I suppose, as to, you know, what people in the older age groups went through over the last 18 months, being stuck indoors and all of that. But anyway, like yourself, they've come out the other side.
We have dogs, and I go walking with the dogs quite a bit, so you get out and get a bit of air.
Yeah, you have to do that. Well, my condolences to you again on the passing of Nan, and we'll keep in touch with you anyway, Mary. And hopefully the teapots will arrive at some stage and you can celebrate with a cup of tea.
Hopefully. And thank you very much, Damon.
Lovely to talk to you, Mary.
Thank you.
Mind yourselves. Bye. Bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Yeah, Mary talking about getting out walking with the dogs and getting her booster and all of that. It's kind of a sign of where we are, and another sign of where we are in these mad times is the fact that we're buying tickets again for concerts. Anne-Marie Flanagan's on the line. Hello, Anne-Marie.
Hi, Damien. How are you?
You love going to concerts yourself.
Yes, I am a big concert goer and festival goer, and I have been since I was an adult. I'm in my late 40s now.
Yeah, but you're a wheelchair user, so explain to us, you know, the problems that you have when trying to get tickets and to go to a concert.
Okay, so yeah, I use a motorised wheelchair, and I also have personal assistants, and they're individuals who help me to do things I'm not able to do myself, and that might include, you know, getting in and out of the car and moving along the ground, and if at concerts, getting up and down ramps and using the bathroom and the different personal care and support needs that I would have. And I suppose for a long, long time, many disabled people have been asking for a personal assistance ticket to help us to go to concerts and events, and we wouldn't be able to otherwise. And we're very lucky that we were heard by the majority of promoters, and since 2004, a number of the promoters provide what I would call, given the environment outside and fields and stuff, quite remarkable access support, including ramps. I go to Electric Picnic every year. There's the campsite. There's electricity to charge wheelchairs. There's wonderful people who help us put up our tents, give us a cup of tea, fridges for medication for those who need it, and so on and so on. And what they certainly provide, as do MCD, is tickets so that we can have somebody to provide support to us. And that, for some of us, is a paid PA, but for others, it's family members, friends, parents, because even if you're with somebody who cares and loves about you, they're still like on the clock in that moment, because when we're outside of our environment, it's even more inaccessible. So it really is a task-driven kind of ticket. It's not there for somebody to have a good time. Of course, we're having a good time. That's the whole idea of concerts and events. But certainly I know that the person who's assisting me is working very hard for the day or the weekend that they're with me.
Okay, so there's no way you could go to the Ed Sheeran concert, which you've bought a ticket, two tickets for, one for yourself and your 10-year-old, without your PA being with you?
100% impossible.
Right. And like at a concert, I know you've outlined it there, but when you say 100% impossible, give me a few examples as to how it would be impossible for you to go to that concert without your PA.
So first of all, it's very, very crowded. And those of us who are using wheelchairs are very low down. And the person who's with me And remember, now I'll have my 10-year-old son as well. So the person's with me all the time, says, excuse me, alerts people that I'm on the way, you know, make sure that I'm not trampled on. Obviously, I use my own voice as well, but I'm a person who I can use my voice. There's loads of other people who may be non-verbals, might be someone with an intellectual disability who needs support. There's somebody who has both physical and intellectual disabilities. Even things, for example, the Porterloos. To the best of those who make the wheelchair accessible ones, they are not one bit accessible. So the level of support that I need to be able to use the facilities is way above what I can do in my own accessible home or workplace.
And the problem is, Anne-Marie, that you've bought two tickets, you need a third ticket, but the promoters are saying, well, if you can get a third ticket, but you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, so that's so getting on to the reason why I suppose I reached out to you is that I suppose every other promoter that engages in Ireland provides all the access that disabled people need, I'm sure can always be improved, and personal assistant tickets. That's part of the access package. And unfortunately, and for whatever reason, there is huge resistance with Aiken. And as we know, they at the moment are providing or promoting the majority of big acts in this country. So I know myself and so many other people, like our heart sinks. So we hear our, you know, our acts that we can't wait to see, or the gig or the play or whoever it is, and be it indoor or outdoor. And the first thing many of us do is look and see who is the promoter.
Okay.
And so if for some of us, it's a few that are exceptional. I mean, and again, I want to say that MCD, which obviously is a big one in Ireland, have been providing full access tickets free since 2004.
That's
17 years ago.
For wheelchair users that need a PA.
Like, you see, this is the other thing. There's a lot of hidden disabilities as well.
Yeah.
So you might, you know, so, but also, and one of the things that in my communication with Aiken over the years, they said back in 2012 that they would try and resolve this issue. But what they wanted to do first was to make sure that there was a way of tracking and evidencing that we were real disabled people, that we weren't just chancers out to try and get free tickets.
Yeah, no, as you said, like MCD, fantastic. Aiken, you know, very reputable, well, probably arguably the best known of all the promoters, bringing in all the big concerts and running them really well. But it, but they have engaged with you and said, look, bottom line is here.
9 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so and 9 years ago, they said by the end of that year, so that was the end of July, sorry, around August, and that they would resolve this issue, and they made that they pointed that out, that they wanted to make sure that they could, you know, make sure it was for disabled people who needed them, which is absolutely fair. And we are here all these years later and hasn't resolved, but I suppose the important part is, and they know this, that through working with promoters and Ticketmaster, that there now is a very clear process and has been for a number of years, about 3 years, where those of us who request different levels of access needs, we are asked to give evidence of our impairment and also to list the level of need. So, for example, in big outdoor events like Croke Park, they have the platform for people with significant physical needs and wheelchair users, and they have what's called an ambulance stand, which is something that's in the last 10 years at all events and festivals and concerts.
Right.
So that's for people who might have a broken leg or a temporary impairment, or maybe a woman who is, you know, pregnant and needs to sit down, and there's that stand.
Okay.
So, like, they do meet the needs of people with, you know, in terms of stands.
Yeah,
so it's very clear who needs PAs.
Yeah, okay. So what you're saying is that when it comes to wheelchair access, not a problem whatsoever at all. You're well looked after, well provided for. I'm sure Aiken have the reasons. I think we've been on to them, and they want to come on and explain why they don't provide a free ticket for your PA. Gillian is on the line there. Gillian, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You're listening there to Anne-Marie, and you'd have a similar experience, but it's your son Joshua.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I would concur with everything that Anne-Marie has said there, especially now coming out of lockdown. It's very disappointing to see that people who are wheelchair users and people with different disabilities who require personal assistance are now finding themselves in the position that all of these wonderful concerts are coming on. As somebody who's from Cork, It is fabulous to think that we wouldn't have to travel very far. Transporting somebody in a wheelchair isn't easy. But unfortunately, we're going to have to make a lot of choices because we're not in a position to be able to pay for the additional ticket for his services.
Right.
Now, he has been able to go to concerts before. Majority of them would have been through MCV. We found the process extremely easy. They were very, very good to us. The people in the Three Arena in particular have always been fantastic and have always prioritised our safety and our care.
Yes.
But he's, you know, he's going to be a teenager soon. This is one activity that he can participate in as fully as everybody else who's seated at a concert.
Yeah.
And it's just not... It's not reasonable in this day and age to turn around and, you know, make it that bit more expensive, that bit more difficult. I mean, I'm a carer. I'm a full-time carer. I'm on carer's allowance. It is enough of a burden to buy the one ticket for him and to then have to negotiate the transport up and down. He may be too tired to be transported up and down. That means finding accessible accommodation and doing all of that. And I just don't understand how one promoter can refuse to do this when it works so beautifully and so well for every other promoter.
So if you're in a wheelchair and you want to go to a concert, in this instance, you know, if I want to go, I'll buy one ticket. But if Joshua wants to go, he has to buy two tickets.
Yes. Absolutely, he'll have to buy two tickets. He is a full-time wheelchair user. He is an amputee. So, you know, his chair are his legs. He also has limited function for his hands, so he would need assistance in every single aspect of his care for the day.
And you want to give him all the opportunities, you know, because he's in a wheelchair and he likes going to concerts, you were saying to us as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, this is something that he can partake in. There's a lot of things that he would like to do that we physically can't do.
Yeah.
This is something that he gets to enjoy. And, you know, he's a real little music fan now. And, you know, when kids come to a certain age, it's all about the music and it's all about the bands. And it's just something that I want to be able to provide for him. It's the one thing he can go to. The majority of the venues are absolutely fantastic. Once you get in the door, they take fantastic care of you.
Yeah.
But it's just this one stumbling block. And the problem is, it's Aiken are now doing all the really big ones that are happening. So it's that stumbling block once again.
Yeah.
And it's very unfortunate.
And he wants to go to Ed Sheeran, is that right?
Oh, he would absolutely love to go to Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I've already made the expenditure of paying for two tickets so he can attend Elton John in Cork.
Okay.
Which
is closer. Yeah.
And yeah. Gillian.
Yes, come in, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, please. Hi, Gillian.
Hi, Anne.
Well done. The other point that I suppose I want to make as well is that, you know, like, if it's understood, and it really is understood, what we described as, it would be unheard of not to have a ramped area now. Mm-hmm. It would be unheard of not to have an accessible toilet. And I suppose for us, it feels so awful that this third party has decided that our personal assistant needs have less value. And the reality is you can have all the ramps in the world, you can have all the toilets in the world, but sure, if we can't get there, they're pointless.
And can I ask you, Anne-Marie, when you're at a concert, how many other wheelchair users in general on average would be at a big concert?
See, that's the other thing. And as we change as a society, more and more and more people are going. So, like, it's exciting. So, like, I've often been on a stand around Derry with another, like, 70, 100 people.
So that you see, that what I'm saying there is that it's an extra 100 tickets on top of your 100, I suppose.
Yeah,
the reason I'm saying that is because...
the reality is that when a promoter makes the decision to organise events as huge as that, right? They bring in, there's a whole load of things. So, for example, I've already said that. So festivals make a decision that for parents to go, they give free tickets for kids. So, or if they they all the staff that are helping, whether they're volunteers,
yeah,
or
they
paid
take
staff,
they take it into account. Yeah,
yeah.
The reason I'm asking, the reason I'm just going on the numbers is because I've just got a statement here from Aikens, and it's just I'll read it to you. They say patrons who require carers tickets and contact Ticketmaster, or often requests come in via Aiken's website and social media, they are responded to by a member of the Aiken Promotions team who will sensitively guide them through the process of verifying that a carer is required on medical grounds, and once established, will organise a ticket for the carer. The reason for doing it this way is that there is, of course, a limit on tickets in the accessible area, and the system strives to prioritise those who need access to a second ticket on medical grounds.
That information is not available anywhere. It's not on the website. It's not on Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster and I have spoken to the customer care manager over the years and have had lovely conversations, and it's very clear. Ticketmaster, and I've sent you my email where they've said that they don't have this policy. Like, you've seen the email. I've shown it to you, the reply from them.
Well, again,
if they're saying that, this is exciting news, and if they show us an avenue to communicate with them. Now, the other thing I would say is, like, that's quite exhaustive. And if Ticketmaster, in conjunction with all the promoters and venues, have this new system in place where we've already verified, so I can only speak for myself. I'm verified as needing a personal assistance service, and I can on my Ticketmaster app. I have my 3 concerts coming up next year,
and I
have my PA tickets.
Well, I'm delighted that we were able to get that. I mean,
that's exciting.
I'm reading that statement, when I read that statement, Gillian, what Aiken, in fairness to them, are saying is, look, we have to make sure that people that are using a wheelchair or the require assistance, that they, you know, that they're genuine about it, because
and they genuinely
need somebody else with them. And if you can prove that, we will look after you. But you have to be able to prove it rather than...
What we're saying, Damien, is that's brilliant that they sent that. And what we'd love now is that they would communicate with Ticketmaster, because when I and others bought our tickets the other night, and of course another issue is that we didn't find out until nearly all the tickets were gone of our chosen day and venue, because I'm from Clare, I'd love to have gone to Limerick, that we couldn't actually go through the process of clicking the accessible ticket area until we downloaded an app. And that was through the fact that we have a network of people who we were communicating with each other. So on websites, it wouldn't let us buy them, but that's a technical issue. But also, there was nowhere, anywhere in that communication that said, because it clicked, so you went on to accessible, bought my tickets, right? And then you had to go and click and PA ticket or attendant ticket.
Okay.
And it came up with €81.
All right. Well, look, according to this statement, what you need to do now, once you hang up, is get in touch with Ticketmaster or directly with Aiken through their website or through social media. That's what they say here. So you can tweet them or email them. And a member of the promotions team will sensitively guide you through the process of verifying that a carer is required on medical grounds. And once established, a carer's ticket will be organised. So that's...
And I think it's important to remove the word medical, because we're not sick people. And that's something that's misunderstood.
Yeah.
So having a physical disability or an intellectual or a visual impairment doesn't make us sick.
You get the gist of it anyway. Look, get in touch with them and let us know how you get on.
We will.
And thanks for highlighting that. And we're delighted
to have been able to
help you. No problem.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And enjoy the concerts. Bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Lucia is on the line in County Meath. And I have to say, Lucia, you know, fair play to you, genuinely fair play to you, because you are one of these people that we see that goes out of your way to pick up other people's rubbish that's thrown out of car windows or dumped in ditches and so on. It's very admirable what you do, cleaning up after other people. But anyway, you're still doing it, are you, most days where you live?
Most days. Yeah. Yes, I am. Hello, Damien. How are things?
Good. Good to talk to you.
Yes, most days. Maybe 3 to 5 times a week.
And
but
why,
I'm not
why
the only
do you
one.
Feel,
There's
but,
other people that do it as well, you know.
Why do you do it, Lucia?
Pardon?
Why do you do it?
Well, Meath County Council set up a scheme. Now, I think they're doing it a long time, but it's only in recent times that I've become aware of it. And they set up a scheme that if you clean up your area, it's called the Green Kilometre, as far as I'm aware. If you pick up the rubbish within your area, now within a kilometre is what you're expected to do or asked to do, to keep an eye on within either sides of your own perimeters, you know, and that they will collect the rubbish then. If you collect up rubbish, put it in bags, leave it on the side of the road, Meath County Council will come and pick it up. So that started off, we'll say, in the spring of this year. For me, that's when it started. And just as a result then, from doing it most days, I just continue doing it. So I'm doing it. I'm out walking every day anyway. So I just continue then doing it then as a result, you know.
And you bring a bag and gloves with you, do you?
I bring my disposable. I've stopped using the disposable gloves because I just felt my hands were sweating a lot in the summertime. So I put on work gloves on me.
Yeah.
And I bring just an ordinary shopping bag with me, an ordinary plastic shopping bag that you get in the shop, or a bin bag, a small bin bag, a pedal bin liner, and bring that with me and fill it. And then I hold on to the rubbish over the couple of weeks. And then when I have a few bags filled, I email County Council and they come and pick it up.
And are you out in the countryside?
I am, yes.
So you're walking along a country road, picking
yes,
up rubbish.
Yes, I do about 3.5 kilometres down and then back. So when I go out for my walk, I watch the rubbish on the road and then I turn and come back and I do it. I pick it up then on the way back.
How filthy are people? What are you picking up out of off the side of the road?
I think it has disimproved during the pandemic, because I think people had nothing else, only they were going to the shops, we'll say, for petrol, or maybe they weren't going for petrol, maybe they were going working. There was no restaurants open, there was no pubs open, so their only outlet was, we'll say, going for takeaways, going for their cans of beers, their sweets, their sandwiches, whatever.
Yeah.
And like, they just eat in the car and drink in the car and then fling it out the window.
Beggar's belief, doesn't it?
But the amount of beer cans is unreal, which means there's people drinking and driving.
Interesting, yeah.
Which is very annoying.
Well, if the passengers might be at it as well. But it's just in this day and age, how do people think it's okay to do that?
And
to throw
it's so,
rubbish
it's
onto...
so frustrating to clean the road and go down then the next day, bring out your bag thinking, oh, sure, I'll have nothing, and fill a bag again.
And did you ever see anybody flinging stuff?
No.
I don't know where it comes from.
No, absolutely not. Last week I found a burnt out chair, a burnt out letterbox. It looked like a fire grate and another piece, and it was all just dumped on the side of the road. So somebody stopped some vehicle and took it out and dropped it in the middle of the on the roadside.
And have you ever picked up actual full black bags of household rubbish where somebody has taken it out of their boot and maybe thrown it?
I've picked up bags, but it's not necessarily household rubbish. It could be other kind of rubbish, newspapers with stuff wrapped up in it or whatever, that I don't go through, obviously. I also got a full bag of potatoes one day.
Right. Full bag of potatoes. What's the most unusual?
I got a scissors last week. A broken scissors. Last week I got an empty deodorant can outside somebody's house. So somebody was driving along and obviously going to work, but on their deodorant, empty can, fling it out the window on somebody's roadside, somebody else's house, you know.
And what about the face masks?
There's quite a few face masks and gloves, a lot of gloves. Now, not an awful lot. That has eased off. It was worse during the pandemic that there was a lot of gloves and things like that. But that kind of... people have eased up on that because people are reusing their masks and that kind of thing. In the beginning, you weren't supposed to reuse masks or reuse gloves and that kind of thing. So that has eased up quite a bit.
And Lucia, do you see it as a hobby? Do you enjoy doing it?
I do not see it as a hobby. At this stage, I feel guilty if I go out on the road and don't bring my gloves with me and my bag. That's the thing. It's not a hobby at all. It's just to keep my area clean.
Well, it's not. Is it a compulsive thing with you? Do you know, like, can you walk past, an empty can on the side of the road, or you're out?
Well, If I wasn't in my own area, I probably would. But I wouldn't consider it compulsive, no. But I just feel now that I'm doing it, I like to keep the area clean.
Yeah.
You know?
You've pride in your area, obviously.
Yes, yes. And I'd love if we could set up a national scheme that... And I don't think it's children. I actually don't think it's children, because I think children bring home their rubbish from school.
Yeah.
Bring home their rubbish, I'm not saying from school, but like any of them that have papers around, you usually see them putting it into their pockets.
What do you think of people who litter on like that?
I think an awful lot of it is thoughtless. I really do think it's thoughtlessness. I don't mind if I see a banana skin or an apple core or even an orange skin, that they don't really rot into the ground, but they do, they will eventually rot into the ground, or the birds will pick them up or that kind of thing, you know. But it is so frustrating to go along. Like, do you remember years ago, before the plastic bag levy, the plastic bags were all over the hedgerows and things like that. I go down other roads now. Our road is gorgeous because it's kept clean. But I go down other roads then and I see rubbish on the roads, and it just turns my stomach to think that people are just... And, like, people are at their houses and they come out their gates and there's rubbish at their gates. They're obviously not picking it up.
Yeah. And have you ever come across the address of... a litterer?
I actually did at one stage. Yes, I did, and I contacted. I didn't contact the individual, but I contacted the county council, and they just said that if I had moved it from where it was, which I didn't, it was too heavy, the particular thing I found, and I had left it where it was. When I went back a couple of hours later, it was gone. Now, I actually don't know where it went, whether it was bin day that day, so maybe the bin men picked it up on the side of the road. Well, I really don't know. But there was a name and address. But I was also told that if I had moved that and still report the name or whatever, and it was brought to court, I would have to go and give evidence.
Oh God, yeah.
Against that person, I would not do.
Yeah, there's far too much plastic on everything now anyway, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Yeah, but this isn't necessarily plastic either. These are cans. Yeah. These are wrappings from sandwiches. Cups of coffee cups, fling them out, you know.
Like, we are doing our best to become more environmentally friendly and protect biodiversity and all of that, and then when you just lose all, you throw your hands in the air when you see that people still think it's okay to fling coffee cups out onto the side of the road.
Yeah, but there should be, like, we're so determined on being eco-friendly and eco this, that and the other, and green here and green there. There should be a national awareness of the state of
and,
the country.
And it's the young people, as we know, that are leading that charge in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Greta Thunberg and the likes. So
that's
you're right.
Right.
It probably
that's
is,
right.
You know, careless adults. Eitel is on the line there. Eitel, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Damien.
So are you involved in the Green Kilometre Project as well, where you're living?
Yes, we are. It's Glashmore and Kinsellbeck Community Council, and we partnered up with Waterford County Council.
Right.
And we have about 40 volunteers who pick up the rubbish around their green kilometre. And many people actually do more than a kilometre.
Yeah.
And it becomes a bit of an obsession, because you get so furious with the things that people throw out in your community.
Yeah.
That, you know, it really would drive you insane.
Is it an endless task?
Yes, it is an endless task at the moment, but that's only at the moment. People will eventually begin to realise that, you know, this isn't acceptable.
Mm.
And the more we do it and the more we keep at it, the more it will become just totally unacceptable to do this kind of thing.
And how long have you been doing this, Eitel?
We started it this spring. Okay. And we've only been doing it for the last few months. Children, people, all sorts of people out collecting rubbish along our beautiful beaches, along the roads. Just rubbish that people just throw out of their cars into somebody else's community.
What's the most common rubbish that you're picking up down there in Waterford?
Well, I suppose the things I've noticed are a lot of takeaway stuff, wrappers from takeaway chips and pizzas and stuff like that that people are obviously eating. Things like cans and bottles, which can actually be recycled. That sort of stuff that people just are slinging out. I mean, some people actually get rid of bigger things, you know, bags of rubbish and all sorts of stuff like that. I found polystyrene along a road, which had obviously blown off a builder's truck, and the builder must have passed up again that road when he was going home. And, you know, it was just left there for days.
Yeah.
So you find anything and everything. It's absolutely incredible.
It's frustrating. It's quite frustrating.
It's very frustrating. But, you know, when a community bands together and decides to do something, it's tremendous encouragement for everybody. Because if you go out and just see a small bit of rubbish and you pick it up, and then the next day there's another bit of rubbish, and you think, oh, what am I doing? It doesn't make a difference. But if there's 40 people out collecting it and doing it and saying, you know, look how much better our area is, look how much cleaner our road is, and you feel part of something, it makes a huge difference to what you're doing.
Yeah, it does, it does. But it's to try and keep the momentum of people doing it, because now that people are back working as well, that they're not in a position to be out walking the roads and cleaning up the rubbish. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yes.
What's the deterrent, you know, for fly tipping?
Well, we need to catch a few of them. And we need to go, we need to see them fined and their names published. Because there's no excuse. There are recycling centres everywhere.
And Eitel, have you ever seen people throwing rubbish out the window of the car? Have you ever caught anybody doing it or seen anybody doing it? Or?
No, I haven't. Yeah. They're very sneaky and underhand, these people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they do it. I mean, they do it when nobody's looking, I suppose, or when they're driving very fast or whatever. And you know the places that are kind of rat runs, you know, where people mm-hmm. are cutting through a community, coming from a town, and you know that on Monday morning you're going to have a great dose of stuff there.
But yes, or
we'll catch them at
Friday
some
night. Thursdays yep. and Friday nights are great nights yep. for all the rubbish to be dumped.
You'd love a high-profile case where the local authorities are able to catch half a dozen people and shame them.
Yeah.
That's what's needed, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, kids are great in school, and schools are doing a wonderful job encouraging children to be environmentally aware.
But who enforces the law? Is it the council? Is it the guards? Who?
It's the council.
It's the council, yeah.
Yeah. They're the people and who can
You say you're only at it since spring, but is it getting worse, or, you know, have you noticed over the years, just yourself, Eitel, is this a problem that's gotten worse over the years?
I think, no, I think it's getting better.
Right.
And I think the other thing is that, well, people are more aware. And the other thing is that litter attracts litter. So if you allow it to stay in your community and at the side of your road, you will have more litter and it will build up and build up. Whereas if you keep your community clean and tidy, it does something. People feel inhibited to throw out rubbish. And eventually that will change the whole way that we think about what we do with our litter.
And hopefully.
Lucy, when you're out, I mean, are you not worried that you might pick something up? You know, I know you're wearing gloves and all of that, but, you know, when you're picking up other people's rubbish.
Yeah, well, I was very aware of that, and that kind of you'd be using your sanitizer gel and washing your hands, and I'd be very particular about it. Yeah, I would be very careful, particularly during the pandemic. It was very, you had to be very careful.
Yeah.
And even still, you know, that we became aware of that a lot more so. But I do think that the roads became worse during the pandemic because people were buying a lot more takeaways. They weren't able to go to the restaurants and have their meals or go in and have lunch or whatever. It was all takeaway.
Yeah.
So it was eating on the go, everything on the run,
and just flinging it out the window.
On the way back.
Yeah. Kieran's in Enniskerry, 51551. Kieran, you're listening to Lucy and Eitel there. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to him, Ian. Yes, well, I'm actually down in Stepaside Village, and I just sent in a text there to your show making the same point as the two ladies. I walk the roads there 3-4 nights a week. From here, you probably know the lie of the land up towards Enniskerry, up that neck of the woods. And,
the Garden of Ireland.
The Garden of Ireland, and the roads are in an awful state. I'm going up, picking up all the similar items, coffee, mostly takeaway rubbish from takeaways, and coffee cups strewn out over the road, bottles, which I have a bit of, I suppose I can understand maybe sometimes those plastic bottles, because it's quite a huge cycling area, and maybe they're falling off cyclists or something cycling in that part of the road. But still, I believe that people should have a bit more responsibility. I continue on up then, and I kind of dump it in the garage because I'm not sure about whether some of the stuff should be recycled or not.
Yeah. What do you think of people that, you know, blatantly dump their rubbish along a beautiful part of the countryside there where you are, Kieran?
I just think I concur with that lady saying that there should be some kind of a promotion or something on TV or radio just to try and educate people. I don't know. I think it's a mixed bag. I don't think it's all young people, because I see a lot of it is takeaway stuff. So I don't think elderly people are eating out of takeaways, to be honest. Yeah. So it's pizza boxes, chip wrappers, McDonald's, all
cigarette
that kind of
boxes.
Stuff. Cigarette boxes, yeah. I pick it all up. And
sometimes I bring
a little plastic bag with me and fill it up.
Yeah, you're saying there we should make it. I mean, there's so many things in this country we successfully made socially unacceptable over the years, and surely a campaign of sorts to make this totally socially unacceptable might not work. I don't know.
I
think when the plastic bag levy came in, the roads definitely cleaned up a lot.
But it
seems to have slipped back again now at this stage.
People should be responsible. I'm sure us three speaking here will bring home our rubbish. If we have a cup of coffee, we'll bring it back in the car and we'll dispose of it in our green bin or whatever you do with your rubbish. You take it back with you or bring it to the nearest garage or whatever. But I can't understand it. I'm walking that road now for quite a number of years. I've lived up here.
Yeah.
I'm just constantly picking up all the time. I don't mind it. I kind of feel kind of a little bit of a social responsibility to the area. Different routes then at time.
Full credit to you. Willie Hughes is on the line as well, down in Waterford. Thanks for your call there, Kieran. Willie, go ahead.
No worries.
Yeah, I was coming over. I was goes out to the church some nights, the Mass, 7 o'clock Mass, out the second half church to Folly in Waterford. Just outside, on the outskirts of the city. But the rubbish dumped here a lot earlier in the year. And I came out one night, I was sitting in the car getting ready to drive out, and I seen a car coming in, and I just stood away, and he passes up, you know, to drive out, because it's a one-way system in and out of the car park. And I fell in the back, hiding behind the back seat, behind the driver, opened the door, getting ready to throw the big bag of rubbish. But the driver spotted me, so I decided to leg it out of the car park, you know, on that occasion. But they do dump rubbish there from time to time, but it's not as bad anymore now, because the caretaker of the church keeps an eye on it, you know, and there's a camera there. But they still come in and drop a bag of rubbish there from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, in the church car park. People
and
do it, like.
Again, a question was put into the other callers. Is it getting worse?
It was bad early on. It slackened off a bit. It's probably because it's a busy road, so I say people are not taking, don't want to be caught, like, you know, but they were at it, like, and then it slackened off. But it could come back again.
Yeah.
It's possible, like, you know, because so I do is get into the car there. I mean, drive out to the Six Cross Road where there's a Green Star. It's a recycling place, and you bring your rubbish out and drive up onto the weighing scales. Drive off the weighing scales, then throw your bag of rubbish in the bin and come back around and weigh the car again, and you go up to the office and pay €3 or €4.
Yeah, and you'd feel good at doing that, wouldn't you?
I goes out on a regular house when we live on my own there. I goes out to the dump once a week, but you know, but it only cost me €3 or €4 for a bag of rubbish if I had, you know, the stuff down again.
Stay there, Willie. Geraldine is in Drimna. We're getting lots of calls on this one now. Geraldine, go ahead. Hi, Geraldine.
There's a group that was set up in Drimna a couple of years ago, the Tidy Drimna, and it's an initiative to try and get people to take pride in their area and litter pick. So they've currently got volunteers on most roads in Drimna, and they go out usually on a Saturday and litter pick for about an hour and try and keep our own areas tidy.
Yeah.
And then Dublin County Council come and collect the litter bags at organised points. So currently we're litter picking about 40 bags of litter a week every Saturday in the area. Yeah.
Just in one area around there. I see a lot of people out with the fluorescent jackets all right at weekends in their local area doing that. And as I said, you know, full admiration for people that have to go and do that, pick up the rubbish after other people. Anne is there as well. Anne, Salt Hill.
Yes, I'm here and looking out on the prom here on the sea here in Blackrock and Salt Hill at the moment. And we have a great cohort of daily swimmers here who keep a great eye on the area around, because they're, like the other speakers there, there's lots of coffee cups, masks blown around, and particularly the plastic and the bottles. And if they go into the sea, we know that's detrimental. So we have Paddy, who's kind of nearly known as Mr. Blackrock, and we have Martin, and a great group of people who constantly keep an eye on any piece of litter, pick it up and dispose of it properly, you know, on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's terrible that people have to do that, though, isn't it, Anne? It's great that they do it. It's terrible that it has to be done.
It is. It's absolutely terrible. But I don't know what it is. I don't know what the mentality is that they can't bring it with them.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know. Well, look, every little helps.
Every little
and that's what's important.
Absolutely.
You know?
No, it's great that people are actually willing to do that. Listen, thanks for that, Anne. Thanks, Eitel.
You're
thanks, Willie,
welcome.
And to our other
colleagues.
Yes, Willie.
And
yeah, in relation to a television, Damien, people do go around in the mornings early in cars and vans looking for stuff to take up off the side of the road. If you see someone had to leave something outside of the gate for the rubbish truck, they put it in the car and bring it away, which was good. But having said that, I left out a television one morning. Sister gave it to me, 28 inch, an old television, the big back, and I managed to get it out by the car and I said, I get my nephew to come down and I ring him up and he lifted, put in the boat and I bring it out to the television place.
Sure.
And I was watching a cup at the sink and I can see a cafe on the phone, the dog. Next thing, a car comes around the corner. Put television
in the
car and gone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I tell you, I'm going to have to cut you off.
Just a big thank you to the cohort in BlackRock community.
All of those. Listen, I'm going to weigh over time and I have to take a break. But thanks for all your calls and thanks for your great work.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.